Feel that? Radioactive Sports. 105 The Ticket.
Hey, Mike is kind of a prick, huh? Oh, I wanna
hear it. You're a real prick, man. I don't even know you. Oh, I
wanna be rich. Wow! Oh,
I wanna be rich. Hell no.
That's hockey this time of year. There's a fine line, and every game is going to be tight. Teams are all playing for something, and we're pretty close to playoff hockey right now, and that's you know, what you're facing.
I'm telling you, Mike Hill's got this thing right where the hell he wants it. Jim Rich knows exactly where that is. He'll tell us where it is because we haven't been able to find it in a while, but he knows.
James.
He knows. Jim Rich, are you there?
Yes, of course. Why wouldn't I be here?
I don't know. I mean, that's a better question.
You tried to kick me off my own show last night.
That was awesome, by the way.
I just, Parrish and I decided that it was time for us to star the whole thing all the way through.
It was unbelievable.
And when you said I was done, are you kidding me? I felt like you on this show. Are you kidding me? You're telling me I'm done? I'm finished? No way.
No. Mark was getting pushy.
Yeah, but you told me it was time for me to go and Mark Parrish to come in. And I said, are you kidding me? I have to go? That wasn't right.
You could have stayed in the background back there.
It was weird because the superstar and Parrish were coming on to the it was Randy and that weather nerdy looking guy and Jim Rich.
Ian Leonard.
And then you said Happy Easter at the end of it. I mean, it was just like a big cluster last night. It was funny, though. I mean, the content was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. Looked like you guys actually like each other.
Not really.
But no. I know that's not the truth.
No, everybody's very nervous when the star comes in. He gets a little squirmy over there in the weather center. He does not enjoy it when you cross over to his side of the deck.
Yeah, I walked over and sort of stared him down. And I just said, relax, take it easy. And then he started talking about spring, and it started making me think of Easter break. So I just said something about Happy Easter. I don't know really why I did that.
You want to eat peeps. That's why.
Peeps. That's what I want to do. Peep. I love peeps. How about you?
No.
Of course.
Oh, jeez.
I don't.
Tell me what you like about
the...
What?
They're the greatest, Peeps. Yeah,
they aren't. They're not bad. What about this team that we have now with the Minnesota Wild? How good are they? How good can they be down the stretch here? Nashville. I'm sorry. Why do I want to say Memphis? Nashville tomorrow night. How do you see them on St. Paddy's Day?
Yes. Well, you heard Mr. Parrish because you were lurking, hoping to tip my chair over and take it back last night.
Indeed.
That, you know, he feels that win in St. Louis is kind of a barrier breaker for the Wild because they hadn't won there since, I believe it was 07. I know they had lost their last 13 straight there. And I said to him, well, come on, they got outshot 42-19 or something like that. How is that a big milestone victory? And he goes, because you won. Because you figured out a way to get out of there with 2 points. And your life. And he goes, he's had that happen to him when one team always seems to have your number. You finally break through, and then the next time it becomes easier and easier. And they have two more shots at the Blues, so we'll see if that gives them traction. But here, the Nashville is the same scenario. They went into Nashville a couple of weeks ago, and they were number one flying high, and everybody thought, oh boy, this is where the Wild's run ends. And instead, the Wild skate away with a victory, and now Nashville has just won 2 of their last 10 games. So they have spiraled out of control since the Wild were there. So they should be pretty confident flying in there tomorrow evening to take on the Predators.
Jim Rich from Fox 9, Friday night's game against the Anaheim Ducks was just brutal for the Wild. It seemed like the Wild is supposed to be the faster team, but the way the Anaheim Ducks just manhandled them, they looked almost faster, stronger. Is there any chance... I mean, is there any way you think the Wild can beat the Anaheim Ducks? They just looked unbeatable.
I think they can. I mean, their goaltending was good that night, but it's been shaky down the stretch for the Ducks. Frederik Andersen has been hurt. He's coming back in, still looking a little rusty. And then the rookie, John Gibson, has been okay, sometimes better than that, like he was in that game. But most of the games he's been, all right. So you would think the goaltending would be in favor of the Wild, and they could get things going. But this is what I've been talking about all season long. When you play these bigger teams, the Wild don't match up well. And the Ducks are bigger. They're physically intimidating. The Blues are physically intimidating. They dominate the boards. And that's something that, you know, Chuck Fletcher has made a couple moves, brought in Bergenheim, brought in Chris Stewart, trying to beef up the Wild. But, you know, all in all, the Wild are a small hockey club. So they're going to have to live off chances. They're going to have to live off turnovers and try to get their speed game going. Because if it's a game that's ground out along the boards, they're going to get thrown around pretty easily.
But, Jim, we do have one thing. We have a secret weapon known as the Dubinator.
Wow.
And, I mean, you can skate fast, you can skate slow, but the Dubinator's in front of the net, and it's not going to happen with him standing in front of the net. How much more can he go like this? We have all said up to this point that he should have been out once or twice, maybe even by now. He has not come out yet. He continues to go by that he will stay in until he's told to come out. Will Yo ever really take him out before the end of the season?
You would think so at some time, but it just, you know, Friday, I was thinking that Saturday's game would have been the perfect opportunity had they won Friday night against Anaheim. But as soon as you lost that game, you're like, okay, we can't afford to start a losing streak now. We got to go with the best people. So we threw them back in, and they were rewarded, because if that was Kemper in there, and his past performances, the Wild would have lost 7-1 to St. Louis if Kemper was in that game. So you just have to keep riding the hot hand, and Perry talked about it. He said, you know, look at Patrick Waugh. He came out of nowhere as a rookie, led the Canadiens to a cup. You can go back to Ken Dryden. He came out of college, joined the Canadiens, and all of a sudden he ran the table and was the MVP of the Stanley Cup Finals. He says, you see goalies get on a run. And, you know, Quick took the L.A. Kings to the Cup a couple years ago. So, really, you just have to ride these hot hands. And as long as that Dubnyk keeps telling you, oh, yeah, I'm fine, then he's going to keep putting them back in there.
Well, do you think it's because of where he's been over the last couple of years, Devan Dubnyk? Being out last year, being, you know, two down, three deep in the lineup in Arizona with the Coyotes. I mean, is that it? I mean, he doesn't want to come out. He appreciates, and starting with a team like this team. Is it going to be up to him totally that he says, I don't want to come out? Or is it going to be up to Yo someday to say, look, you're coming out?
Unless Yo sees something that he needs to take him out, I think he's going to let Devan stay in there as long as he wants, because you're right. He was at the end of his hockey career. I mean, he was sitting in the AHL in some hotel room, just sitting there going like, really? What happened to me?
Can you imagine that?
I was a first round pick, you know, and then I'm just sitting here in some small town in an AHL game. And it's just like, this is not me. And he spent some time with some coaches that kind of helped him find himself, get back to the confidence that he needs. And, you know, he's kind of like where Kemper is now. That's where he was last summer. And now we'll have to see if Kemper has the, you know, the will and the fortitude inside himself to pull himself out of this when he gets another chance.
It's amazing what's out there on the street. You know, when you think, you look back at a few of the games that we've seen here just recently, like with Seattle with Chris Matthews in the Super Bowl and the kind of game he had. You look over at Malcolm Butler. And where he was, the game winner was made by Malcolm Butler. Then you have a guy like Dubnyk, who is just, he comes out of nowhere. He's sitting around. What light switch comes on in someone like this to make him the best goaltender in the NHL right now coming down the stretch? It's amazing.
I think it's reality. I think you realize that, you know what? I'm going to have to go to Walmart and get a job tomorrow if I don't figure this out. I think that's what really hits, because these kids that are told that they're the greatest all the way up, and, oh, you don't need to do that, you're the best, and sometimes it gets in their heads that, yeah, I'm the greatest, I don't need to work that hard. And, you know, we can maybe see that with Cordero Patterson. Same kind of scenario. He came in here, was great right away, and now all of a sudden he's fell off the map, and the Vikings go get another big-time deep threat because he couldn't do the job, you know, and now it's time to, the cards are on the table for guys like that. Dubnyk had his moment. Patterson's is coming. Are you going to play, Are you folding your cards and heading to Walmart? What are you doing?
Yeah, Jim Rich from Fox 9. Can you stick around with us for another segment to talk Vikings? We've run out of time, but we want to talk Vikings with you. The superstar. I watched you last night on Fox 9 Sports Now, and the superstar said you have some pretty interesting takes about the Minnesota Vikings.
It's going to be tight.
That's completely fine. How about this, Jim Rich? Because we're going to talk. That's fine. We're going to talk about Mike Wallace and the newest Vikings. So 651-989-9105 for those that want to call and take part on Vikings Talk. 651-989-9105. Jim Rich, check your email. We're having a bracket challenge here at 105theticket.com, and I sent you a login to get into that.
All right, I'll do it.
We'd love to have you be part of our deal. So for everybody listening, head to 105theticket.com. Get your picks into the $1 million bracket challenge. Don't miss your chance for $1 million or $10,000, both very nice. I'd take either. You'll also see how you match up with your favorite ticket personalities or Fox 9 peeps. Deadline 11 a.m. on Thursday. Head now to 105theticket.com. James, thank you.
All right. Sorry, boys, but I got pressing issues.
That's okay. You got to take care of what you got to take care of, and you'll join us tomorrow, I hope.
Absolutely.
Every day.
Thank you, Jim.
Mamboa.
Thank you, Jim.
See ya.
Jim, thanks.
No problem.
It's ridiculous around here. Come on back, everybody. Radioactive Sports.
This is Mike Wallace. Just wanted to let y'all know, you know, I'm excited to be here. You know, I'm excited about the opportunity that Coach Zimmer gave me. Great city, from what I've heard. You know, great young quarterback. A lot of good players on the team. Young team, I'm looking just to be, you know, an asset to the team. I want to help out. Just do the best I can.
That's all you can do. Just come in here with a good attitude. Make good friends, especially with Ted. You want to be great, great friends with Ted, so he throws you the dog on football. But I think there's going to be room for him on this team. There has to be now.
There has to be. $9 million. But what about all the things? Because on Friday, we kind of broke the news in the afternoon that, well, oh, my God, Minnesota Vikings are talking. Have been talking to Mike Wallace, general manager Rick Spielman, head coach Mike Zimmer for the last hour. And then after the trade happened and we got off the air, there were all this internet rumors and buzz that he didn't want to come here. He wasn't happy with the trade. Doesn't like the weather. He was telling teammates, I'd rather not go to Minnesota. And then he comes here over the weekend, and obviously part of that little thing that we just played here, but he's saying, no, I'm happy to be here. I love the city. I love that. I love this.
It's incredible. I mean, when you go down to Miami, of course you have your choice between Miami and Minnesota, and you're thinking, it's kind of nice down in Miami. Nice little place to live, perhaps, maybe someday. But then you get down there, and you find it's not quite what it was supposed to be, or you're not being treated the way you thought you'd be. Then you become a problem. You become a diva, in fact, or you just basically don't play the way they expected you to play. And now they're down on you and you're looking for a way out. And just before they cut Mike Wallace, we picked him up. And now all of a sudden you have to kind of backtrack on what you were saying about Minnesota and why you didn't pick Minnesota. And, you know, now it's not so bad. That's not bad now because I'm looking for a job. If I don't pick Minnesota now,
he's lucky he didn't have to restructure his contract.
Yeah,
because there's no way anybody would pay him $9 million a year, which is what the Vikings have to pay him next year.
You know, and I'm not so sure he's done with that contract right now the way it sits. They assume the contract, but they can still go back and ask him to restructure right now, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I think he still has guaranteed money that the Miami Dolphins have to pay him this year and next year.
And that makes it easier, and that's why the Vikings don't mind as much. But they can still come back and do it if they wanted to.
Interesting. 651-989-9105. That's our phone number if you want to talk Minnesota Vikings. 651-989-9105. Just like Weston from Red Wing. What's up, Weston? You're on 105 The Ticket.
Not much, boys. Good to talk to you again.
You too?
I got 2 points for you.
Okay.
One, this will sound ridiculous. We will not have two Hall of Famers in this same conversation. But Mike Wallace, as a lower speed but same type of guy Randy Moss was, and Charles Johnson as a possession receiver that Chris Carter used to be. Now, I like that tandem, and if Rick Spielman keeps doing what he's doing and takes the top player on the board, hopefully Amari Cooper's there at 11, take him as the slot, and hopefully take over for Wallace in a year or two. And my second point is that $5 million we saved by cutting Jennings this year, I'd say, I know we need a middle linebacker. Give it to Rolando McClain out of Dallas, give him a one-year, $5 million prove-it deal. And he's suspended for the first four games, but I'd say give Adi Cole the chance for the first four games, take over, and see what happens from then on.
Soup, what do you think on Weston from Red Wings' thoughts on
the second point that he made was I think pretty interesting. Is the money you save by getting rid of Jennings and bringing Wallace in? I'm not so big on the analogy between Wallace and Randy Moss and Charles Johnson for Chris Carter. I don't know about that, but they're very capable. Both guys are very capable, just not Moss and Carter capable. But I would say that. Yeah, that's a good point with McLean down in Dallas. With the saved money is to go down there and offer him 1 year the way Fairley got with St. Louis, with the Rams, to come in and prove yourself for top dollar. I mean, for $5 million. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, I mean, and we'll talk about it after that, but you can come in and have, it's basically your job to lose. And I like that. Audie Cole for the first four games until you can come back and play, but let's find out what he's all about too. Let him start four games. I kind of like that.
What happens if you pay $5 million to Rolando McLean, just like Weston was talking about from Red Wing, and Audie Cole comes in and starts the regular season for the first four games,
I mean, at least you're...
and he's amazing. Like, we think he could be if he got the opportunity to start every game.
I think it'd be great to see him start. It'd be a perfect opportunity, and if he couldn't do it, and if it wasn't going well, you could make do with some patchwork, whether it be Anthony Barr, whatever, a Greenway in the middle, until McLean got active. But McLean's going to go by the wayside if Audie Cole comes in and excels.
Of course.
I mean, you just let him fall off that one-year deal and re-sign Audie for something better.
How do you like Rolando McLean, though? Obviously, the four-game suspension means getting in trouble one more time away from being out for the entire year. And I like the one-year prove-it deal that Weston was saying.
But I like that.
$5 million for a guy like that and a prove-it deal that's only going to play 12 games for you I like that deal.
I don't know what a regular contract would go for a guy in that market, for his ability and for his years in the league. I think it's probably still a good deal at $5 million, but at least you only have him on paper for 1 year. And I like that. He falls away quickly if he can't adhere to the rules and learn something from what's happening to him right now, then you have him for one year and you're done.
So if you pay him $5 million, does he get that four game? Is that cut off the $5 million so it ends up only being like 3.8 or 4.2?
No, I would say probably the $5 million probably is a pretty cheap budget for someone like him. Is that he's probably a little higher than that, not much more. But that'd be bargain basement price at $5 million, which is hard to say. It's really hard to say that. $5 million is bargain basement. But in this day and age of free agency, it kind of is, I think. Again, for a starting middle linebacker, Dallas had a good year last year. All the different things being taken into this and all the due diligence necessary, I think the $5 million is probably a pretty good deal for a guy like that.
We're talking Minnesota Vikings football, and we'd love to have your calls, too. 651-989-9105. That's 651-989-9105. The Mike Wallace trade, obviously, on Friday, lost out to Michael Johnson, which I thought was a bummer on Sunday when I read that deal. He ended up leaving on Saturday, and there were, like, tears and this and that. He was telling the Star Tribune and our guy and then Brian Murphy, the Pioneer Press, saying, you know, there are going to be some tears when I have to make a decision here because I love Mike Zimmer. I had a great visit. They offered me a, quote, lucrative deal. And then he went back to the Cincinnati Bengals and signed a four-year, $24 million contract with them because he said that he feels like he's at home there.
I mean, there's a lot that can be said for that. If the guy felt more comfortable around the guys that he was around for a few years before, the teammates, everything that they have going on, the coach, I mean, I know he knows Mike Zimmer. He probably knows that Mike Zimmer's not the easiest guy to work for, too. And maybe Marvin Lewis is an easier guy to work with or to talk to. It's hard to say. But he felt at home, and the money was good to come back. So
Brian Robinson's probably counting his lucky pennies because he would be the next guy out on the
board. I wonder if that wouldn't happen.
Oh, for sure.
You have to wonder.
He says he didn't have a down year last year, but I think everybody else looking from the outside kind of thought he did. And yeah, I don't think it
was the kind of year that Brian wanted. And I remember him being a little bit disappointed in TV interviews after certain games. But a good football player nonetheless. We're going to talk about Adrian Peterson. Any updates that we could find about him and you know, kind of where that might be heading.
And even more Vikings talk.
And way more.
But a lot of interesting stuff about the Arizona Cardinals has been leaking out about a possible trade, what they'd be willing to offer, what they're not willing to accept via his contract. A lot of talkers, but 651-989-9105. That's 651-989-9105. Let's talk the purple.
Feel free to give us a call. That's what we're going to do next, right here on Radioactive Sports.
You're listening to 105 The Ticket. Back to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson.
last time he touched the field, he was the best running back, you know, arguably the best player in the league, you know, so it's going to be great, you know. You see him put 500 pounds on the squat and just do it like it ain't nothing. So, you know, I would definitely prefer him being on our team than on the opposing team. It seemed like the same happy AC, you know, nothing really changed or whatever. He looks like he's hungry, though. I think he has something to prove, you know. I think he definitely has a chip on his shoulder, and he's been taking it out on the weight.
Tom Johnson, newly re-signed defensive tackle Tom Johnson.
He's been working out with Adrian Peterson.
Talking about Adrian Peterson squatting 500 pounds like it ain't nothing, as he said.
Taking out his frustrations on the weights.
I guess that would be a little stress relief, is get in there and just know that you're doing something to prepare yourself for whenever that day does arrive that you can play again. And Tom Johnson saying that he sure looks the part. When didn't he look the part? When hasn't he been in great shape? He always comes ready to play football. So whoever gets him, whether it's us, somebody else, is going to get a heck of a football player. That's all there is to it.
So over the last week or so, obviously, Adrian Peterson went to New York City and met with the Wilfs and general manager Rick Spielman. There hasn't been really anything going on since then. Nelson, I want to call him Nelson Mandela, but Nelson Peterson, Adrian Peterson's dad, has said this and that, which the things haven't come true. He was going to meet with the Vikings again. That obviously not on the docket for the Minnesota Vikings. They denied that. Come Saturday, though, the Arizona Cardinals said they'd be willing to trade, quote, a high draft pick for Adrian Peterson. And then you start to see, maybe the landscape shifting just a little bit. The last week as well, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers said that they're putting together a package to make an aggressive run on Adrian Peterson. Any of these packages, though, you think enough to sway the Wilson, Rick Spielman to part ways with the best running back in football, despite his baggage and despite the $12.75 million salary he has this year?
Yeah, it's a lot of money, and Arizona loves him, and they also love the running back crop in this year's draft, and the Cardinals with the 23rd and the 55th overall picks would be able to get a very good running back. Adrian Peterson entering this year at 30 on Saturday. There's a big difference there. And the only thing you have to weigh into then from that point on is, do we want to take a chance on a running back? A great running back. What's a great running back coming out of college? How about Trent Richardson? Sometimes they don't work out, do they?
No.
How plain and how simple was it to be able to pick a guy like Trent Richardson if you're the Cleveland Browns? It's a gimme. Now you take someone like Adrian Peterson and you say, which one's safer? I'd be willing to bet on the 30-year-old. It's a safer pick to go with Adrian, even though he did come back. We knew that he was going to have one of those seasons where we're going to have to watch to see what was going to happen with that groin injury that he had to have reattached surgically.
But what about Adrian Peterson trading him to the Arizona Cardinals if you're the Minnesota Vikings, getting that extra second-round pick? The Cardinals said they refused to take him at that $12.75 million cap. I think he's a $15 million cap hit, but $12.75 million salary, whether he has to restructure or otherwise Arizona doesn't want him.
So, and he said that he would. He told the Vikings he would be willing to restructure his contract to make it more doable for another team should he be traded.
So two questions. Is a second rounder, that number 55 overall pick, enough for the Vikings to get in return for Adrian Peterson? And second of all, do you think that they could package their two number twos, move back into the first round and snag a guy like a Todd Gurley or a Melvin Gordon?
I mean, that's possible. It's possible. I mean, I'm not so sure that they'd be happy with just the number two from the Cardinals, but they'd free up a lot of money. They would free up a lot of money, and they'd get something in return, and could be happy about that, because up until now, we've been told that the only thing they could get would be a fourth-round draft choice, and who cares? I mean, make him play for that. I mean, you don't want to lose him for a fourth-round draft choice. That's a lot of football player. That's a lot of football
player. But you'd lose him for a second-round draft pick.
It makes it a lot more doable. Knowing what you have in the draft to go to, if you want to replace that second-round draft choice with another running back, there are some good ones out there to have. And just like we read now with the Cardinals, they know that too. And they're realizing that they're sitting right on top of a couple, two, three, four good running backs that they can come in and have them work out and make the team and do well. I mean, Ozzie Newsome swears by just going out and getting a good running back that you have to assess it right. But he likes his chances to pick a good running back in this day and age. It's just easier to do.
Obviously, with the offense of Adrian Peterson, Mike Wallace spreading the field.
Yeah.
Mike Wallace is going to spread the field. They're not going to be able to have those eight guys in the box. And if you do, obviously he's not Randy Moss. We had a guy call up earlier and was comparing Mike Wallace to Randy Moss. but he does take the top off of the defense, kind of like Randy Moss did. And so just that speedy wide receiver that the Minnesota Vikings have been looking for since before Bernard Berrien, another terrible free agent signing.
Garbage.
To have Adrian Peterson in the backfield, in my opinion, is the way to go for the Minnesota Vikings. But if they do decide to trade him, are you fine with maybe adding another running back in the draft to a three-headed monster of Matt Asiata and Jerick McKinnon? I mean, last year, we talk about this all the time, the Vikings were still 10th in rushing in the NFL with 4.4 yards per carry.
What do you think is going to fall to us at 11? Because that definitely, you can't use that on a running back. Not when you have offensive line issues up front. And if you haven't addressed that somehow with a veteran free agent that you can count on that left side at that left guard slot, don't you have to? Don't you have to do something and not let everything get picked through and like go out and get the fourth, fifth, sixth guy that's still remaining on the veteran free agency to pull in here as that offensive lineman to sit with Khalil and Sullivan? No. Go out and get the best offensive lineman you can
at 11. Number 11. Yeah, they almost have to now because of the way the free agency is spread thin.
It's thinned out.
But at the same time, we still need a cornerback and we still need Trey Waynes. Well, we still need a middle linebacker. We still would like a safety at some point.
You sure would, but I don't know. You can't think that way. I don't think when you're looking at Teddy Bridgewater, come on, you got to give him a chance. You have to give a running game a chance. You have to find someone that you know. Look, there are a lot of good offensive linemen out there every year in the draft. You have to find a shoe-in. You have to find it's not easy to do. They're talking about Sure from Iowa. That's the kid. Offensive guard, tackle, both. I guess he can play them both. Now, I haven't seen him play much. Not very much at all. A little bit.
But the Minnesota Vikings don't necessarily usually target who they're going to get, but all signs point to the fact that they have to get an offensive guard.
Yeah.
In the first round.
That's what Jerry Jones has done. We all know Jerry Jones. He's been the skill position guy for the last decade. He finally stopped doing everything in the way of spending money, big money, to go out and get the next skill position guy in the draft and started building this offensive line with Tyrone Smith and the Martin this time around, re-signing Doug Free, doing the right thing and making and creating that wall that they now have. And I just think you have to address that. And to use 11 on anything else, I think is maybe not a good idea.
No,
if you're going to do 11 with Trey Waynes, that's fine, and get an offensive lineman right away. That's how you should do it. Don't talk running back yet. I mean, wait down the line.
Third or fourth round.
Yeah, I think that's how I do it.
Got to take a break. Our guest is in studio.
Yeah, Brandon Warren from Cold Omaha, one of the writers here at 105 The Ticket. We'll be talking about, wow, can Joe Mauer really rebound? That's what he wants to talk about. I don't know about that. Come on back. Radioactive Sports.
People ask what Omaha means. It's a run play, but it could be a pass play.
The 3-1, a swing, a line drive to left, down the line, slicing, landing fair on the grass, rolling and banging off the wall. Schaefer scores, Mauer to second base, he's got a feet-first sliding RBI double. Twins take a 1-0 lead.
And we welcome Brandon Warren, as we told you earlier, one of the writers here at 105 The Ticket with Cold Omaha. They stop by and see us every single day, one of the writers does, and Brandon Warren here today to talk a little bit about Joe Mauer. And when I say the name Joe Mauer, I think injury and soft. That's what he's gotten himself sort of tagged as, and being that kind of guy, that kind of player. Can he rebound or not?
Yeah, the trouble is we didn't hear enough of those highlights that we played here at the opener. And the hope is that he's rip-roaring, ready to go. Uninhibited spring training right now, hopefully. We heard that last year. We didn't know how true it was. And so the hope is that he's basically restriction-free and ready to spring out of the gates when they head on the road to begin the season.
When you say spring out of the gates and you say Joe Mauer in the same sentence, I just have a hard time believing it because, I mean, just listen to how he speaks. It's so, like, monotone and just very, almost bored, but here he is talking about spring training.
It's good to be back in the clubhouse with all the guys and to get out on the field. And you know, pretty much everybody was here a few days early, so that's always a good sign. But, you know, I'm still learning and I'm still trying to get better as best I can over there. But I feel a lot more comfortable this year than last year. We got some new faces in here, you know, players and coaches, and enthusiasm was high, and it was good.
Well, what an exciting face of the franchise, a guy that we're paying $23 million a year to, and a guy that I think you called in your article at 105theticket.com. I don't remember exactly what you said, but he had such a frustrating year last year. He was booed, basically a league average first baseman, striking out 18.5% of his plate appearances last year, up from 17.5% the year before. He's gone 88, 89, 96 in the last 3 years. But his career high before that, 64 strikeouts. 64, I think is what you said. 64! And it continues to grow, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, when you start with such a high achievement gap there between you and the rest of what everybody else in the league does, it's a little more worrisome as you get closer to that 100-strikeout plateau, which 10 years ago meant a lot more than it does now. The game is trending where strikeouts aren't that big of a deal. But it's something that's worrisome for a guy who relies on quick twitch muscles to do everything that he does. And he lets the ball get real deep. That's why he goes to opposite field so frequently. And when you have to start cheating for that, whether it's cheating on a fastball, it's 95. And it seems like every reliever you face from the sixth inning on throws 95 miles an hour now. Those strikeouts can add up, and that can signal a decline that may not show up in your front-end stats quite as fast.
But at the same time, Joe Mauer was hitting into the shift last year. He wasn't necessarily hitting to the opposite field a lot. And that was another thing that not only was he striking out, but he was hitting into double plays in the shift all the time. And it's like, dude, you're Joe Mauer. You have the prettiest swing in all of Major League Baseball. What are you doing?
Yeah, the weird thing is, if I were to shift him, I don't know how I would do it, because obviously he does hit the ground balls to second quite frequently. But he's also a guy that kind of his picturesque, you know, peel it over the shortstop into left center field. So I think he's a tougher guy to shift than, you know, some of your prototypical power hitters that roll over everything like your Adam Duns. But at the same time, yeah, it's going to be part of his game that has to evolve, is that if he's going to rip those ground balls right to second base, people are going to keep pitching to him exactly how they have been, and he's going to have to do something differently.
Down the stretch, though, last year, you mentioned in the article, after he got back, August 11, for a 44-game span, I mean, he actually took off and started to play more Mauer-like baseball. What finally happened? What light switch came on for him? Did he have a conversation with somebody, or did he finally just, you know, make up his mind that he was going to tough things out and stop crying about everything, apparently, and start, you know, doing what he's supposed to do, doing what he's paid to do, and good money.
Yeah, and I mean, when he left with the oblique injury that cost him all those games, I think he just hit a double, left the game, and he sat out, yeah, it was over a month. And so when he came back, I don't know if there was something going on with his head, if there was something going on, because, you know, with the concussions, they're different for everybody. Justin Morneau missed a whole bunch of time, and he was a pretty lousy baseball player in the meantime as he was coming back. But then guys like Ryan Domet, who caught for the Twins, he had multiple concussions and would come back pretty quickly because he was just ready. Like, the brain is so complex that some guys can come back at different times or whatever. Anyway, when Mauer came back, the oblique was healthy. The oblique wasn't a lingering issue. We had no indication. We thought, you know, it must have been hurt on that double. But when he came back, it was a lot more like vintage Joe Mauer. Now, it wasn't superstar MVP candidate Joe Mauer, wasn't batting title Joe Mauer, but it was hitting doubles, taking walks, not striking out so doggone much. And, you know, he looked a little more Joe Mauer like. Now, he'll be 32 in a couple weeks after the season starts. What is left in terms of a ceiling for him is unclear, because at 31, 32, you know, you're not the same player you were at 28 the first time he had a really bad, you know, injury marred season. So if the ceiling is depressed a little bit, you know, maybe that's the player he can be, is who he was in the second half. That's not a terrible thing. It's not a superstar.
It's not a $23 million a year guy. We're talking to Brandon Warren, part of our Cold Omaha writing team at 105theticket.com, talking about his new article online, Can Joe Mauer Rebound, making $23 million a year for 3 more years on his contract, right? Four more years on his contract. Will he be a Minnesota Twin by the time that contract is done, is my first question. And second of all, could they even move him because of he's the big albatross around the neck of this franchise now.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a no-trade clause, so there's no doubt in my mind he'll be around, and he wants to be here. I don't think his personality would really do well in a bigger market. He could get out in front of the message and control the message regarding himself, I think, a little better.
How? Because he doesn't control it here. Well, and here's an easiest place to control the message. You're the hometown hero.
He's not really a media guy, though. He doesn't talk to the media very often at all. I mean, Brian Dozier talks to the media a ton. Glenn Perkins talks to the media a ton. Mike Pelfrey talks to the media more than Joe Maurer talks to the media. So he could get out and control the message a little bit more, and I think he's content to just not know what the message is about him publicly. So that's something he could do. I think the team could do a little better is, you know, let people know he really was hurt when he was missing games. You know, they were just kind of shrouded in mystery. Like, you know, his head hurts, his legs hurt. Well, tell us more about what's going on with this guy.
Well, that's just it. I mean, the question for me is, why doesn't he talk to the media much? He's capable of talking to the media. It's not that he can't talk. Even if he's a quiet type, you need to address the fact that you're the guy here in town. You're the guy on this team that needs to come out and say a little bit more, especially when you're hurt and you're not in front of the hometown. When you're hurt and they come to watch you play, there's no question about who they're coming to watch when they come through the gates. Why is it that you won't at least let them know how you are, when you're coming back, and give us more? Why does he not do that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he knows his stock quotes are kind of what he does. The pretty neat deals and the hanging out with the guys, and it's a really nice deal.
He's Leave It to Beaver,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's just who he is. And
well,
if that's, you know, if he's not somebody different behind the scenes, that wouldn't surprise me. It's just he doesn't have that much to say, and so he'd prefer not to be on repeat saying the same thing over and over again.
Well, plus at the same time, though, too, I think Ron Gardenhire babied him a ton. And babied maybe some of the other guys, but specifically the guy he called JoJo, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And so that's not there anymore, and let's hope Paul Molitor will maybe let him out to wave in the wind just a little bit more than Ron Gardenhire did and show him, hey, man, I mean, you're getting booed out there for a reason. I mean, it's come to Jesus time here, Joe Maurer.
Yeah, it's funny that if he were protected by Gardner, he'd be like the last guy you would expect to need it. You know, rookies need it. Sometimes guys who are going through really tough stretches do, but not the face of the franchise. So
they're booing him at home, at Target Field, the place where he grew up. So, Gardy, I would imagine. JoJo, oh, God, are you okay? What's going on?
You can't help some people. I mean, they're booing a guy who's going to possibly be a future Hall of Famer, too. So there is that. I mean, Sometimes you just let the fans be the fans.
Can he really be a Hall of Famer? The way he's been going here last 2 or 3 years.
He had an unbelievable first, what was it, yeah. 5, 6 years in the league?
5 or 6 years were fantastic. Now he's down at first base because he's injury prone. He's still injury prone now that he's down at first base. He can't pick up a ball bat and do anything with that anymore, apparently. 289 last year for the last 179 plate appearances. What? Hall of Fame coming down the stretch like this, people only remember what they last remember, and that was the last 2 or 3 years of his career.
He'll need 3 or 4 more years of respectable production to get
right. What's respectable production?
Yeah, he'll have to turn this around.
What he did in the second half of last year.
The 289?
Yeah.
Batting 289 will get him into the Hall of Fame.
He's got a 400 on base, yeah, because on base is
397 slugging?
You know, the slugging, it's bad, but they were also playing in a depressed era of offense with the strikeouts and with pitching. Yeah. So the context adjusted, there's a case. I think, you know, the people outside of Minneapolis like him a lot more than the people inside of Minneapolis. National people love him. So,
and you know what? Because they don't have to watch him every day.
And I think this too, Brandon. I honestly think this. He has to come out and make himself more available to the media. He can talk his way out of this a lot better and help smooth it out much better and get himself back on track because of the way the media will help him do that. If he just was more open and honest about the way he feels about things, it wouldn't be so hard. As it is now, apparently, because it seems, I'm sure, me versus the rest of the world. Well, just let the media take control and help smooth this thing out and try and get yourself back on track.
It'd be one thing if he was going to get the New York Post back page treatment like A-Rod, but there's not a lot of sharks in the Twin Cities media. Let's be honest. He's not going to get exiled on the weekend news.
We want him to talk and speak his mind.
Yeah, I mean, It's telling that a local guy like this could fall that far in terms of public perception, where every single time Fox Sports North or the Pioneer Press posts an article about him on Facebook, it's 30 comments of how weak he is, how soft he is, like with no regard for the fact that he's one of the greatest Twins of all time.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, soft, he's terrible.
He is soft and terrible.
That
I hate him.
Not something associated with some of the great Twins here.
No, you would never say that about Ken Herbeck, Kirby Puckett,
Killebrew.
No, Tony Oliva. Even Chuck Knobloch, who we hate, would never say that about him.
The same thing's happening to Joey Votto in Cincinnati, though. He's getting just crucified because he walks a ton, and there's a ton of value in walks, but everybody hates it. The broadcasters there are just skewering the guy. And Maurer, to a lesser extent, because he doesn't hit for quite as much power as Votto, is doing basically the same thing.
Then 24
walks, 32 strikeouts during that same period of time, 44 games.
Yeah, so he's getting back to doing what Joe Mauer does. You don't have to love the skills, but if it's what he does, at least you can extract maximum value out of the guy.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting, to say the very least, to see if he can make this comeback, to see if he can make it stick and not just until the next injury. Because when something happens, and it's going to, he's got to be tougher than this. He can't just walk out and be in the tub for another month and a half.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing that if fans wish they had seen more Joe Mauer over his career, you can't quibble with that. There's no question it would have been nice to see him play more often. Now, he played pretty much an average number of games for a catcher, and I think that is something that fans don't really take into account, is that catchers play less games. Maybe they average 120 games a year, 130 games. So there's that built-in curve. Now there's the DH, so he can do that a little more. But if the ultimate gripe is, gee, I wish I could have seen Joe Mauer play more often, you can't get on people for that. That's a legitimate good gripe to want to have answers for.
Especially when they're paying tons of money to go watch baseball games at the brand new Taj Mahal of baseball in town, Target Field. But it's not cheap to go to a game.
Well, Gardy said that his thing was to have Mauer rest on the road because of Twins fans paying to see Mauer. Like, that was a big thing for him. I didn't know that really sounded believable.
It's the same thing the Timberwolves are doing with Kevin Garnett right now.
Right. And, that makes sense, you know. That makes sense.
You know what? It's hard to make sense out of nonsense. And that's what I think Joe Mauer is sometimes. Thank you, Brandon Warren, from Cold Omaha. Joe Mauer, a long ways to go before he can regain, I think, his fan base. Come on back, though. We're going to take a little break and come back last week tonight with John Oliver on HBO on the NCAA and March Madness. We're going to do a little talk about that, huh?
And we've got a couple of minutes. Have you heard it? It's all over. Have you seen it, Brandon? I've heard about it.
No, I heard about it, too.
I'll play about 2.5 minutes worth of him talking and taking rips at the NCAA. He brings up the Minnesota Vikings. We'll talk about that as well. But interesting as we get into March Madness and then bracket season here this week.
Let's talk about that when we come back right here on Radioactive Sports.